Social Structures of African Carnivores. This is the Wild Eye Podcast. Hey everybody, my name is Jerry, I'm from Wild Eye. And a couple of months ago, I mentioned that I'm going to be doing a podcast series or an episode series of the Big Five: lion, leopard, elephant, buffalo, and rhino. And the idea was to kind of talk you through the anatomy, biology, behavior, dispersion, conservation stages, everything you need to know about these Big Five animals. Now, the reason for that and the reason for this week's episode is I believe, and this goes through everything in life, the more you know, the better it gets. So when you are, for example, watching a documentary or when you join us on a trip to Africa, the more you know about the thing you're watching, the more you're going to appreciate it, the more context you'll have. And I believe also from a photographic point of view, the more you know, the better you can photograph the subject. So, I'm referencing here one of the books that I've highly recommended to quite a few guests is The Safari Companion by Richard D. Estes, A Guide to Watching African Mammals. So, I am going to be talking you guys through the different social structures of some of the African carnivores you might see when you come on safari. So, we're going to break them down into polygynous, which would include most carnivores, and slender mongoose, serval, and leopard would be an example. Monogamous, something like the aardvark and the badger. Monogamous family units like jackals. We are then going to talk about things like dwarf mongoose, wild dogs, lion, and spotted hyena. And just look at how they approach kind of their social structures. Looking at things like dispersion patterns and mating, territorial behavior, offspring, care and feeding of the young, and forage. Do they go hunt on their own? Do they hunt as a pack? Whatever the case is. But before we dig into that, I thought I would just punch in the word carnivore into Perplexity AI, which is the one AI model that I use for research, which is quite nice. Gives me links and I can follow through. So when I typed in carnivore, this is what I got. A carnivore is an animal or plant that obtains its food and energy requirements from the consumption of animal tissues, mainly muscle, fat, and other soft tissues, whether through hunting or scavenging. This term is derived from Latin, with caro meaning meat or flesh, and vorare meaning to devour. The dietary habits of carnivores can vary, with some being obligate carnivores, consuming at least 70% meat, while others are mesocarnivores, consuming at least 50% meat, and hypocarnivores, consuming less than 30% meat. The order Carnivora, which includes mammals such as dogs, foxes, crocodiles, and sharks, is often associated with carnivores, but not all members of this order are purely meat eaters. The term carnivore can also refer to people who eat meat. In addition to animals, there are also carnivorous plants that trap and digest insects and sometimes small frogs and even mammals for nutrients. So carnivores, when you come on safari, carnivores they've got this aura around them. We want to see them. We want to see what they do. We want to potentially see them hunt. They definitely have, there's like a different energy when you're watching a carnivore versus a prey species. And I think that's maybe one of the things that got me here is the more you can understand when you watch these animals, the better you can appreciate them. So here we go. Again, we're going to look at the type of mating structure, dispersion patterns, their territorial behavior, and this is all just top level broad strokes, yeah? The offspring, how they kind of manage that, the care and the feeding of the young, who's responsible, and then foraging. How do these animals go and find their food? So, let's start with polygynous. Now, this is most carnivores, but the examples here would include something like slender mongoose, serval, and leopard. Dispersion patterns. So, your male and your female is associated only while they're in mating. The males then have a territory that could include one or more female's territories overlapping. So, you won't have a male territory overlapping with another male territory, but two, three, or if he's lucky, five female territories might overlap with one male's territory. Territorial behavior. An animal that is in this grouping would defend its territory against same-sex outsiders. So, a male will defend his territory against another male coming in, but if it's a female, he might be difficult with her, but he's not going to defend it as fiercely as against a same-sex outsider. Offspring. Now, for these kind of animals, the polygynous ones, slender mongoose, serval, and leopard, the youngsters disperse in adolescence. However, you do sometimes find that some of the females may settle into the mother's range. Leopard would be the example, of course, where when young male leopards get to a certain age, they get kicked and they've got to go and do their own thing, whereas the females might hang around for longer and eventually settle in mom's range and then eventually move off from there. In this group of animals, the care and the feeding of the young is done purely by the mothers. So when daddy leopard has made babies and the babies are born, daddy leopard leaves and it's up to mommy leopard to take care of them, right? It's just how it is. We'll talk about the other ones when we get to them. And foraging, the polygynous group of carnivores, they are solitary feeders. So they would go and hunt and or forage on their own. No group hunting, no pack hunting. Right, next grouping we're going to talk about here is monogamous carnivores. So that would include aardwolf, which is one of the hyena species, and badger. Now, in this grouping, the male and the female lives permanently together as a mated pair. They would also, from a territorial behavior point of view, mark the territory together and defend the territory together. When it gets to offspring, both sexes, male and female youngsters, will usually disperse during adolescence. So mom and dad will stay together, the youngsters will get to a certain point, and then they get said, listen, time for you guys to go, and off they go. Now, with care and feeding of young in these monogamous carnivores, the male shares some of the parental duties and provisions the offspring and or the mate with food during the time when she's looking after the youngsters, he might assist, but there is in this instant an involvement from the male's point of view. Foraging for monogamous carnivores, this can be done in pairs or alone. So if you've been lucky enough to see one of these aardwolf or a badger, if you're lucky enough to see one, that's cool. He or she might be doing its thing. But badgers often, if you find one foraging around, take your time, be nice and quiet, look around. You might find the other one because they do forage in pairs and alone. Right, the next grouping here, which is very similar to the previous, is monogamous family units. Now, in this instance, we are talking about jackals, like black-back jackals. Now, their dispersion pattern, normally you'll find a pair with youngs of the year and yearling offspring. So that would be, again, a male and female with younger youngsters, and you'll find those together. The territorial behavior, the yearlings help defend the family territories. Now you've got a family thing going here, where mom and dad, they're the obviously alphas, the youngsters will protect mom and dad and the territory as much as they can. When it comes to care and feeding of the young, the offspring help rear the younger siblings. So if you have a one-year-old jackal and you've got new babies, for example, if they punch them through that quickly, then they will also try and assist with the caring and the feed of those youngsters. Then foraging, jackals often go foraging in pairs. You can find them alone, but rarely in packs. Once or twice in the Masai Mara, I have seen their groups of jackal that they come together, but this could also be a whole group of not dominant in the area jackal pairs, right? That's a discussion that we can have. But often your monogamous family unit jackals hunt in pairs or alone, and once in a while you might find all of them making a pack. Now, all of the ones we just spoke about, so the polygynous, monogamous, and monogamous family units, these are all solitary and territorial animals. So that, again, slender mongoose, serval, leopard, aardwolf, badger, and jackals. These are all territorial and solitary animals. Now, the next animals we're going to speak about are all sociable, so bigger groups. It can be a clan or a pack, and the group may then include adults of both sexes. So the first one we're going to look at here is dwarf mongoose. Now, these are also big family groups, remember? Now, from a dispersion pattern and mating system, your dwarf mongoose, they're very cute. You find them in the Lowveld quite often. They have a dominant pair that monopolizes reproduction. So you might find 15 adults if it's a big group, but only two of them dominate the reproduction. From a territorial behavior, the scent marking is mainly done by the dominant pair. This not only marks it against outsiders, but it also kind of reminds the guys in your own clan that, hey, listen, we're it. Okay, the offspring can either transfer or stay in the natal pack. So if you're lucky enough to get born into the alpha pair of a dwarf mongoose pack, you could either stay there or you'll find they integrate with the rest of the pack, which kind of spreads it across. Now, you're going to find the following care and feeding of young with all of the animals we're speaking about now kind of all together. It's communal. So the dominant pairs and the other adults all look after the youngsters. The older youngsters will help look after the youngsters. So communal care for all of the ones we're speaking about now. Now, in foraging for something like dwarf mongoose, there is individual foraging in packs. So what they do is early in the morning, they'll wake up, they'll all come out, and they'll all forage, which if you just look at it, it looks like they're all foraging together, but each one to his own. There is no food sharing. If I find a grub, that's my grub. Find your own grub, right? Next one, African wild dog. Now, they're very similar to what we just spoken about. The dispersion pattern and mating system for African wild dog is once again the dominant pair monopolizes reproduction. You get the alpha male, you get the alpha female, right? And they're top of the pride, or bad analogy, Jerry. They're top of the pack, right? Their territorial behavior, they're not really as territorial, but their scent marking is done by the dominant pair. So the entire group has a big territory that they run through, and they do mark that, but it's done mostly by the dominant pair. Offspring. Now, I've seen wild dog packs up until, I think my biggest one was 42, right? Now, how these start fracturing up is the males tend to hang around, but then when it gets too big, extra females will start emigrating away, and they will break away packs. At some stage, you'll also find that the dominant males then, if they manage it for a long time, some of the younger males will also start splitting off. And these then meet with females from other packs, and that's how the whole system would run. But often, it's the extra females that emigrate first once the pack gets too big. The care and the feeding of young, again, with African wild dog is communal. And then foraging here becomes interesting because this is the best pack hunting animal in Africa. And they do what's called food sharing. So African wild dogs have the biggest success rate of any predator in Africa because they hunt in packs. Lions notoriously bad. They're actually really, really bad hunters. But the wild dogs do pack hunting. They built and designed for distance and speed to basically run their prey to death. They'll grab and they pull. It's brutal to see. But African wild dog also do food sharing where, let's say for example, there are young ones back at the den. The other animals would bring food back and regurgitate for them. That is why they are such a strong and structured pack, right? So, yeah, one of the most amazing animals. I hope you do get to see that when you guys go on safari. Right, let's talk lions. Now, lions, in a dispersion pattern and mating system, all adult members of the pride breeds. So, for example, let's say you have two dominant males and you've got seven females. Often we're asked on safari, and there's cubs around, people ask, who's the dad? Well, the dad is both of them because you don't know. They might take over halfway. They might change. But all adult members of the pride breed. The one male might mate with three of the females. The other male might mate with four. There might be cubs of different ages. But the entire social unit, the entire pride, all of the adult members breed. Now, territorial behavior. Individuals and group territorial defense is against the same sex. Now, this is what the literature says, which means that in a lion territory, males will fight off strange males and females will fight off strange females. The lions don't always read the books. So I've seen where dominant males totally just panel beat another female that came in from another pride. So theoretically, yes, males will chase away males, females will chase away females, but this is on an individual and a group basis. One pride will defend its territory against another. Again, the book says male on male, female on female, but it doesn't always work that way. Now, offspring. With lions, males and some females leave the pride. They emigrate. They go away. Why? When a male lion gets to about 2.5 years of age, he has certain needs and urges as his testosterone kind of starts pumping. And it's nature's way of stopping the gene pool getting very shallow and interbreeding happening. So the dominant males of the pride will politely ask, in inverted commas, these young males to go. There'll be tension, there'll be fights, and eventually after the young male gets it into his head, he will leave the pride. He then becomes a nomad, and he might meet up with other nomads. If he's lucky enough, there might be a brother that got kicked out with him. But they would then be a nomad until they find a territory that's vacant that they can take over, or until they can kick out another dominant pair from another pride, dominant males, right? Communal care is, again, the way that the care and feeding of young happen with lions. And from a foraging or hunting point of view, individual and group hunting. So we have seen males hunting on their own, a single male or a single female. Or we've seen the entire pride stalk, spring a trap, and bring down buffalo, right? The one thing that a lot of people still get wrong is some people still believe that male lions don't hunt and that they just steal from the females. The catch is that the males often leave the pride, which is the group of females, to go and defend the territory, to mark the territory, and then to meet up with them again a week later. What would they eat if they didn't have the females with them? No, male lions also hunt. They tend to take bigger animals, but they are also pretty successful from a lion point of view in hunting. So no, the males and the females hunt. The literature also says to us that lions do food sharing. Now, it's a different way than the wild dogs do it, because wild dogs would literally eat food on the kill, go back and regurgitate for the rest of the pack that stayed behind. Lions don't do that. They just all feed on the same carcass, on the same kill. I'm sure for those of you that have been on safari, you've seen that can turn into quite an aggressive mealtime display, because once the food gets less and less, the tensions get higher, and they do lash out at each other. Sometimes it turns into fights, but from a food sharing point of view, it's not like you get your wildebeest and I get mine. They do feed together. Right, last one, spotted hyena. Now, their dispersion pattern and mating system, they're sizable clans. These things can be huge, and within that, there are separate rank orders, right? Now, in the hyena society, females are dominant, and there's one alpha male which falls below all the females, and he normally sires most of the offspring. So how it works, you get the hyena queen, which is the boss lady, then you've got the other females, then the dominant male, and then whichever other males there happen to be. So if you are lucky enough to be born to the hyena queen, you rank right up there above everybody else. If you're a male in a hyena, in a hyena clan, you're just there to mate as and when the females want it. Yeah? Right, territorial behavior. The entire clan would show aggression against outsiders, and they're all involved in territorial defense. If you've been lucky enough to see hyenas doing a territorial defense kind of action, it's noisy, it's loud, and it can be quite brutal. I've often seen in the Mara, because the hyena population, and it's huge, there we've often seen interactions where it seems like one member of a certain pride or pack, or clan rather, was isolated by another one, and it is nasty. Everybody gets involved, and everybody plays together. So offspring within spotted hyena, the males tend to emigrate, because obviously their life kind of sucks. They're just there for one thing. But then most of the females tend to remain in the clan. So again, if you are, the hierarchy would be hyena queen, then the next dominant, and so on and so forth. Their offspring will slot into that hierarchy depending on where they get born. Now, the care and feeding of the young, there is no real communal care here. You look after your kid. Mothers rear their own young unassisted. So the thing is this, if the hyena queen is looking after her youngster, and let's say female number 7 in line is looking after her youngster, the hyena queen's kids are going to have a way better life. Why? Because that female is going to have better and more access to better food if they take something down. But there's no communal care. Mothers rear their own young unassisted. That said, if you sit at a hyena den, which is something great to do if you're on safari, if you find a hyena den, just go and sit there. The interaction is amazing, because after a while, you can see, that's probably the dominant female, that's the dominant female's kids. And then they might go and play with other ones, but it's an interesting thing. It's a phenomenal, phenomenally interesting species to watch. And then from a foraging point of view, spotted hyena can hunt either individually or as packs. That people think of them as only scavengers, and I blame the Lion King for this, right? What was it? Ed and Eddie, or whatever their names were. They made them look like really stupid scavengers. Hyenas have a better hunting success rate than lions because they do hunt in packs. Again, their back legs are short, shoulders are strong, and long forelegs, front legs. So they would almost have a gallop action, very similar to a wildebeest, means they can run for a very long time, which means they basically exhaust their prey and start eating them alive when they get tired. Hyenas also do hunt individually. I recall one instance, we were coming out of the Mara camp, and as we came out, there was a river crossing, and all these wildebeest came through the river. And one of my clients asked when this happened, there was a sub-adult wildebeest, and then a hyena started chasing it, and they were just running circles in this field. And my client, it was Ida, actually, if you're listening, she said to me, oh, is this, what's he doing? Is he hunting? I said, no, he probably won't. And I didn't even finish my sentence, and the hyena pulled down the wildebeest right next to our car. So, like I said, they start feeding when the animal's still alive. So if there's one, it takes a while, it's not pretty, but they do hunt on their own and as packs. The literature also says that they do food sharing, but it is not the most friendly food sharing system if you've seen it. They might take something down, or they might arrive at a carcass, and often they'll grab and run. And you might get a leg, I might get a skull, and then the guys in between are running to try and steal mine and steal yours. It's an interesting thing, but theoretically, they do food share because they feed off the same carcass. Right. I hope there's something in there for you. I hope there's just a little bit of an introduction into more of the natural history type of animal process that we're doing. I am going to do the big five. When I come back from my next trip, I'll probably start getting stuck into that. And then I'm going to go deeper as well, a little bit into the ecology, a little bit into conservation status, but also in the history of how these animals got to be what they are and do what they are. Again, I think the more you know, the better it gets. And with safari, that's even more true than anywhere else. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to reach out. Jerry van der Walt on all the social media platforms, or jerry@wildeye.com. I always love hearing from you. And also, if you enjoy the podcast, could I ask that you please subscribe on the various platforms wherever you listen, and maybe give us a thumbs up. It means a lot. It helps the show get bigger, and hopefully I can try and scale this up with some ideas that I have for the future. Guys, as always, I hope you found some value there, and I'll chat to you in the next episode. My name is Jerry. I'm from Wild Eye. Bye for now.